Very good. Welcome to the second day, full day, at Club Med Serpentine, this Club Meditation. And I hope you're enjoying it is Club Med. Yeah, somebody actually once showed me the schedule they have at, you know, the other Club Meds, the Club Mediterranean. And I couldn't believe how stressful it was. People were on holiday. And they have to get up early morning for yoga, and then they have their breakfast, and then they have scuba diving, and then they have all these other activities throughout the day. And then after dinner they have a nightclub. And they must get so tired after one day at Club Med. So it's supposed to be a holiday, for goodness sake. Why do people have to have so much activity to enjoy themselves? And so this is the real Club Med. The Club Meditation, where you can really get away from it all, instead of just getting more of the same whenever you go on holiday. And so here we're trying to get away from whatever this thing is, it all, to have a bit of peace and quiet, and to be able to relax. So you've got your nice bed, you've got your nice food, you've got your entertainment in the evening, care of Ajahn Brahm, the comedian, and all this other sort of stuff. And it does mean you can learn how to relax and be peaceful and quiet. And a lot of times, you know, that it happens naturally. You know, sometimes people think that they are doing the meditation. They've got to work hard, get up early, do this and do that. But you know, the truth of it is it just happens quite naturally. That especially, you know, you've got some monks and nuns meditating here, they tend to drag you along with them into peace and quiet. Because there's this old story from the time of the Buddha, it's one of my favorite stories, of this elephant. And this elephant was a really nice elephant. He belonged to the king. Now in those days, elephants were like your Mercedes or BMWs. You know, that's what you used to travel around the place with. So if you had a really good elephant, that was like, you know, having like a Ferrari car or something, some with, you know, your prized vehicle. And so this really nice elephant and always be very obedient and very compliant until one day the elephant started getting a bit cranky. You know, he just wouldn't do, you know, what he was told and would not sort of go where he was asked to go and start to really mess around, just like when the elephant keeper was cleaning up, you know, behind the elephant. That's when the elephant would poo all over the elephant keeper. And if you've seen how much an elephant poos, that's a lot of poo. So the people looking after the elephant thought the elephant must be sick. It must have some sort of virus or something that is misbehaving. It's not its usual character. And they took the elephant doctor there. So it was a girl elephant. They took the elephant doctor there and they tried everything. And nothing worked, and then they maybe thought it was the elephant equivalent of menopause. You know what it is like sometimes. Anyway, the elephants don't have menopause. And it was just, they couldn't figure out what was wrong with this elephant. And so in the end, according to this story, the Buddha's previous life, he was a minister, and he said, I'll check this out. So what he did was actually go to the elephant stall and just stay there overnight, trying to find out what was going on. And in the middle of the night, he was woken up, the minister. There was some sort of weird sound behind the elephant stall in the middle of the night. Now, if you woke up in the middle of the night and you heard weird sounds from behind your cottage, would you go outside to check or would you hide under your blankets? Number one, you don't have anything to fear around here, Ajahn Brahm's here, so you're perfectly safe, guaranteed, money back guarantee. And you don't pay any money anyway, well, except the deposit, which is a donation, but you can get that back if you really want to, but you're perfectly safe. So he decided to go and check it out. So he crept round the back of the elephant store, and what he found there was a gang. You know, these bad people, you know, robbing and extorting money from others. They were meeting there every evening, because it was quiet, to plan all the stuff they were going to do that evening. And he realized the cause of the elephant's problems. Because the elephant was actually picking up on what they call the bad vibes of these crooks and gangsters. Even though the elephant couldn't understand, you know, the English or whatever language they were saying, still you could pick up sort of the character of these bad people. And night after night after night, the elephant had picked up this bad character and had started to become a bad elephant himself or herself. And the minister just had all those gangsters arrested the next night, told the king, and he replaced them with monks. So the monks had to meet there every evening, you know, do some meditation, a bit of chanting, discussing of Dharma and stuff like that. And after a few days, the elephant came back to his normal character, just because of the good influence of others. And that's a very powerful story which the Buddha said. It's a story about the nature of the mind, psychology. If you hang around and associate with peaceful people, you become peaceful yourself no matter what happens. It's one of the reasons why people like coming to stay at Buddhist monasteries or nunneries. Because, you know, they link in to the peaceful and kind energies of the monks and nuns. And so you come and stay in the monastery and you get calmer and more peaceful and more kind. But the problem is when you come and stay with us, we get more agitated. Please don't build too many guest quarters at Dhammasara. But anyway, we're going to take you into nice peaceful state. So a lot of times just being here and getting off on the atmosphere, that is sometimes more important than all the effort and the tricks of the trade which you do. You get drawn into peacefulness and quietness just because of the nature of the place and the nature of what people are doing here. So, first thing to talk about today is, look, you don't have to worry, you're going to get peaceful anyway, whether you like it or not. Well, you do like it because it's very wonderful. But the next thing I wanted to talk about is, that it's nice for you to think you're doing something. And so in order for you to have the impression you're doing something, I give these talks, and they're what... And the talk I'm going to give today is, I mentioned this yesterday, just I was flagged I was going to talk about thinking and how we can overcome what's probably the biggest problem in people's meditation. You know, how to overcome, transcend this mind, which is always thinking. And sometimes people keep telling me, oh, I can't meditate. I'm always thinking about something, thinking about anything, but I'm always thinking and I can't stop thinking. And that becomes one of the biggest obstacles to being a meditator. They cannot stop thinking. But the truth of the matter is, it's very easy to stop thinking. And a lot of people do it quite naturally. Very often they stop thinking. And there is a classic example, a demonstration, which I love doing on every retreat to show you how easy it is to stop thinking and what it feels like when you stop thinking. Because at least you can recognize, yes, it is possible, I can do it. And for many people, that is an amazing to realize, yes, they can stop thinking. It is possible and they've actually experienced it. And the little demonstration is to ask you that when I am speaking, to also be aware of the reaction to my words inside your mind. So don't just listen to what I'm saying, also to listen to just what it does to you inside your mind. Because as I am speaking, as long as you're mindful inside a little bit, as I am speaking, you will begin to notice something strange, that between my words there are long gaps. In those spaces between my words, what was happening in your mind? You were silent. You were aware, but not a thought was going on in your mind. You can do it. And this is what it feels like. being aware, hearing the sounds of the birds. But without a thought going on in your head. Easy, isn't it? Now just carry on for another 2 hours. Now you know what silence is and how beautiful it feels. Now we have to try and understand, why is it that we keep destroying this silence with all these thoughts? And you realize, you're all old enough now to realize that 99%, and I'm being quite generous, 99% of your thoughts are total rubbish. It's one of the reasons why that people come and ask me, Ajahn Brahm, you've been a monk for many years, you've got good meditation, people really respect you. Can you read minds? And my answer is, if I could, I wouldn't read yours. Is your mind really worth reading? Is it sort of a great work of art? Or is it just one of these really pulp fiction novels you get in sort of in a second hand shop which nobody else wants to even open up the front cover of? And I think you know that your mind, it would not interest anyone else. So it's just rubbish thoughts which are happening in our mind. Now that's a good thing to remember. Because one of the first important means of overcoming your thoughts is realizing just what a waste of time they are. You don't get wisdom through thinking. If you think you don't get wisdom, you get headache. Not wisdom. And solving problems. Now you've all got problems to solve, decisions to make in your life. I have that, Bodhinyana Monastery, Jhana Groving, the Nuns Monastery, and all these other places over east and other places I've got to make decisions for. But I learned a long time ago, don't think to find a solution. Because all really the great answers of life, even the great answers to your worldly problems, come in silence. That is where the greatest answers come from. And the great example of that, and I always like telling anecdotes to flesh out these methods and to show they actually do work. If any of you go walking down by the lake over there in that lower garden, there is a tree over there, a Bodhi tree, dedicated to Nawaninat. You know, she died a long time ago. But she was a senior social worker, and I don't mind telling stories now that people are dead, because they sometimes get upset at me when I say about their stories when they're alive. they're funny stories. I tell stories about myself when I'm still alive, and yeah, they're funny and just make people laugh. I don't care. I'm not embarrassed. But this particular girl, she was a senior social worker in Perth, and one of her jobs, you know, she told me that she had to make these decisions when maybe one of the parents was single and maybe a drug addict. Should I take the children into care? Should I separate a mother from her children because the mother is incapable of looking after them? And that's just a tough decision to make because, you know, if you keep the children with their parents and their parents are just aren't capable, you know, it hurts a child to be separated from their parents, but then it harms the children to be with their parents. And it's such a very heart-wrenching decision. Someone has to make it, and she was the one who had to make those decisions. So, you know, really, really high-stress job. If you made a mistake, she destroyed her life, that poor kid. And often they kept her with the parents, and sometimes the parents would, you know, kill the kid. So it was a very, very tough decision she had to make. So she booked into coming on one of the retreats, came late, as usual, you know, high-stress jobs. She said that she was trying to tie up all the loose ends. And of course, you know, you can't tie up all the loose ends. There's just too many of them. So she did as much as she could. Right, that's the 11 o'clock in the evening, I'm going to the retreat. So, you know, she arrived really late, midnight or something. And she has been following my teachings for a long time. She knew what to do. You know, she rested for the first couple of days and then just got into her meditation slowly. She didn't sort of go for broke the first few days. She relaxed, as I keep telling you to do. You know, just, you know, have a nice walk somewhere. Sit outside and have a cup of tea. Explore the grounds. Walk over to Bodhinyana Monastery. When you sort of, you get into the quietness and the peace, then your mind will want to meditate. You don't have to force it. Don't fight it, for goodness sake. And so she did that. After a few days, she settled down, and then she started getting into her meditation. And when she came on to the interviews towards the end of the retreat, she said that was an amazing experience she had. She got really peaceful, very quiet. She totally forgot about all the problems she had at work days ago. And she was nice and peaceful and quiet. And then, from within that silence, all these solutions came to the problems she had at work. She didn't think about it, they just came straight up to her. They bubbled up from who knows where. And she immediately opened her eyes, got out a piece of paper and wrote them down. You know, so that when she went back to work in a few days' time, she could actually action those great ideas. And when she came to me, she said, "Those are such brilliant solutions. I could not have thought those solutions. I had to just be quiet and let the solutions come to me." And I thought, what a wise woman that was. That is how you find solutions to many of the problems you face in life. That's how I find solutions to problems which, you know, as manager of a Buddhist organization, the CMO, the chief monk officer of Bodhinyana Monastery, whatever. So, you find sort of solutions by not thinking about them, getting nice and peaceful, then ideas come up, and they're really good ideas when they come from the silence. I trust that so much now. It's a really, really difficult decision. I've got to make a decision about something, and it's really crucial. I make sure I stop thinking about it. And then, later on, answers come. Try that. And you'll find how effective it is, and how it means you can have no stress and still be highly effective in whatever career you're following. Now, I mention this because it means that you don't need to think. Because a lot of times people say, but I've got to work out this answer. It's important for my family, for my career, for my business, for my monastery. I've got to work this out. If it's really important, then shut up and be silent. And then the greatest ideas, they come to you. You can't think them out. And this is one of the reasons why. This is one of my famous demonstrations. What is this? Does anyone know? You're allowed to speak. Don't need noble silence now. What is this which I am holding up? Tell me something about it. Wood? Okay, that's a start. It's wood. What else can you say about it? Used to hit a bell, that's its function, yes. Anything else? Tell me some more about this. Like in a test at school, you've got to describe what this is. What is it? Yeah, what else? Small and light. Small and light, yes, you said. It's cylindrical, yes. What else can you see here? Now, some of you have done this with me before. What happens is, when you start thinking about it, you give it a name. And once you've given it a name, a lot of people think they're finished with it. You know, it's a stick for banging the bell. And they think that's all it is. And because they think that's all it is, they don't go any further. It's much more than a stick for banging the bell. It's also... that's nice. If you think it's only a stick for banging the bell, there's other uses which you can never even imagine. So what happens is, when we start looking at something, we have names for it. That's what's called thoughts. It's cylindrical, yeah, it's wooden, it's brown, it's carved at the end, and it's light or whatever you think it is. Those are all the names. But what's very interesting exercise is to look at something like this bit of wood until you've exhausted all your names. And you can't think of any other name to call this. But you can still see more and more and more what's happening inside this piece of wood. You know, the thoughts are so superficial. Who's this person holding up the piece of wood? It's Ajahn Brahm, is it? Who is Ajahn Brahm anyway? So sometimes we give it a name, we think we know it. But you don't. The names are what cover up the truth. It's not what reveal the truth. You had to get underneath the thoughts, underneath the names, to find out what this actually is. I told people recently when I was teaching a retreat in Penang that when I was at university, there was many societies I joined, and one was the Astronomical Society. I always loved stuff like that. And I had learned the names of the stars and the constellations, that, you know, whether it was a galaxy or supernova, or I knew all those words. And when I went to Thailand and I saw the sky at night, I couldn't see the stars anymore. All I could see were the names. And everyone else was saying how beautiful it was. And I couldn't see the beauty. All I could see was like little labels next to every star. And it took me years. You know, I had to do this deliberately, to forget the names. It was an act of will. So now I can look at the stars at night. I don't know which one is which. And I can see how beautiful they are. How often is it the names obstruct the beauty? They hide the truth. Which is one of the reasons all our thoughts are just playing with names, with words, with descriptions. Gong Bonger, Ajahn Brahm, Alpha Centauri. Now when you can stop all those names, the thoughts stop and you can start to see things again. You can appreciate the beauty of the forest. You don't have to know what species is which. You just enjoy it. Now this is one of the reasons why that I've been marketing the importance of silence over thinking. If you want to appreciate things, if you want to see deeply into things and find answers to problems in life, don't assume that you'll get there through thinking. Many people who have trained their thought to be far sharper, more powerful than my thought would ever be, you know, the great intellects, the great philosophers, you know, you may have met some of them, and they are totally stupid. They've got no understanding at all about life. They're great thinkers, but they're not wise. So, here we're going to try and be silent instead of thinking our way through problems. So, well, how do we do that? It's not that hard. First of all, we take away the importance of thinking. So when there's a thought comes, oh, that's not important. Oh, I'll think about that tomorrow. Oh, that's not really going to get me anywhere. So first of all, please lessen the value of thoughts and increase the value in silence. Because whatever you find valuable is what you will keep. If you had if someone was giving like $1,000 donation and they gave it to Dania to keep until we can next take it into town, I hope she would look after that. I hope she wouldn't just leave it hanging around anywhere for anybody to take. If it's really valuable, she should look after it because it's valuable, it's important, it's $1,000. Now, what's more important? Silence. Or $1,000. When you really value silence, you never put it away somewhere and lose it and forget where it was. You'd look upon it like I always say, like a mother and her child. I've never known a mother take her baby into the shopping mall, leave it in some shop and go home. Say, oh God, where did I leave the baby? No, was it in the baker's? Was it in the bank? Where did I leave my baby? They wouldn't do that, would they? Because the baby is so valuable for them that they would always look after it and keep it and they wouldn't lose it. If you can look at silence like your baby, caring for it, you wouldn't drop it, you wouldn't lose it, it will be there with you all the time. Why? Because it's valuable and precious for you. So, number one, convince yourself that silence is really valuable. But even so, people just can't stop thinking. And I was wondering, why is it that, you know, even though the silence is just so gorgeous, it's so beautiful, and it's so pregnant with all sorts of wisdoms, it's great for your health, you get so many benefits with the silence, why is it that people keep destroying the silence? Now, you all know just how quiet places like this are. And I was surprised when I first came to Australia and came to these quiet forests. I would always walk in these forests, you know, in Australia, with reverence and respect to the silence. I wouldn't like to destroy it. And if I was with anyone, I'd always whisper to them, because I didn't want to destroy the silence. But when I saw some other, especially young people, come into the forest, they wouldn't just talk in an ordinary voice, they would actually talk in a loud voice. They were actually shouting in the silence. Until I realized the reason they're doing this, they were afraid of the silence. Because silence can be very scary at times. So after a while, if you want to enjoy the silence of your mind, you've got to face that fear of silence. Leave it alone. You don't need to control it. It is perfectly safe and embracing. I think one of the reasons why it's scary is because it's incredibly powerful. It empowers your body, it empowers your mind, it empowers your wisdom, it empowers your health. And quite naturally, we're afraid of things which are more powerful than us. Even if they are kind and benevolent, still we're afraid of them because they're big. So if you can recognize that silence is very powerful, but it's also very benevolent and friendly to you, then you can overcome your fear. Just stay with the silence a little bit longer until you can get so used to the silence you don't need to destroy it anymore. So the silence can stay with you. You just don't need to think. It stays with you. It's quiet. And the other reason why we think too much, and it's also the reason why many of you fall asleep when you're meditating, even though you've had enough sleep already. Because, you know, it's two days already, you know, you should have had, or at least getting close to topping up your sleep requirements. But you'll find the next day, the day afterwards, you still get sleepy when you're meditating. And it's not physical tiredness, it's again boredom. And you know what boredom really is? What boredom really is, now it is, your mind is trying to run away from you. That's why we think anything to run away. And this is where I come to my little simile, which I developed over a few years, of the coffee shop. The simile of the coffee shop goes like this. Now, those of you who have come to every retreat, you are going to hear the same story again and again and again until you understand it. When you understand it, you don't need to come to a retreat anymore, you become enlightened. So your penance for coming every time is to hear the same stories every time. So anyway, this is a coffee shop simile. Someone gives you a call in the afternoon and say, "Are you free this afternoon? Come for a cup of coffee." And you say, "Okay, I'm free this afternoon." And then they tell you, "We are going to go to Gloria Jean's, not Dome, not Coffee Bean, not Starbucks, we're going to go to Gloria Jean's, because I like Gloria Jean's. I know you don't like Gloria Jean's, by the way, that this should be sponsored by Gloria Jean's. I expect a free cup of coffee the next time I go there for sponsoring Gloria Jean's coffee shops." And I should get sponsorship as a monk, you know, because I, now this is actually recorded. And you do go sort of online overseas. And many people actually now listen to my talks. How many, the talks in Nonamara, how many people actually download them? Isn't that 30, 40,000? That sort of number? So imagine we can get sponsorship. I could sort of open up my robe, and underneath the robe was, where's it gone? Gloria Jean's! We can make a lot of money for the Buddhist Society that way. We can finish off the Dhammasara Nuns Monastery, no worries at all. Ajahn Brahm only uses Gillette razor blades. The possibilities are endless. But anyway, so she said, I want to go to Glory Jeans. I don't want to go to those other coffee shops because I don't like them. And you are going to have a latte, not a cappuccino, because I know you just like your cappuccinos, but I like lattes, and you're going to have one too. And you're not going to have one of those muffins, those blueberry namby-pamby muffins. You're going to have a Anzac biscuit, because it's like Anzac Day soon. So we're going to have a biscuit, and that's what you're going to eat. We're not going to sit out in the front where you like sitting. We're going to sit in the back. We're not going to talk about your stupid Buddhism. We're going to talk about politics, and I like talking about politics. We're going to stay there for an hour and a half, because that's how much time I have. Not an hour, not 2 hours, 1 hour and a half. Okay? Now, if someone invited you for a cup of coffee, and they told you where you're going to go, what coffee you're going to drink, what you're going to eat, what you're going to talk about, where you're going to sit, and for how long, would you want to go with them? Of course not. You make up some excuse. I just remembered. Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I've got to go to the dentist this afternoon. It slipped my mind. I'm terribly sorry. Anything to get out of going with such a control freak. And so you get out of that, and a few minutes later you get a call from somebody else. They say, how are you feeling this afternoon? And you say, no, I've got to go to the dentist. And they say, oh, it's such a shame. You know, that coffee shop you keep on liking, no, I'd like to try that. And you say those lattes that that coffee shop are to die for. I don't really like lattes, but you know, you praise them so much, maybe I like to have one as well. And, you know, you want to talk, always talking about this Buddhism and meditation business. You know, maybe, you know, you can tell me some more about Buddhism. And we can sit wherever you want, however long you want to sit. If someone is kind to you like that, and interested in what you're interested in, you'd probably say, hang on, I'll just cancel the dentist appointment, I'm coming. You'd want to go with them, because they're kind and they're interested in what you're interested in. And you go and stay there, and you spend all afternoon there, 3, 4, 5 hours, because you're hanging out with a good friend. Now hopefully you can understand that simile, if you haven't heard it before. If you've heard it before, it's reinforcing something very important. You sit down on your mat or on your chair, and you tell your mind, right, mind, we are now going to watch the breath. We're not going to do loving kindness meditation, not going to do vipassana, we're going to do sweeping. You're going to watch the breath, because that's what I want you to watch. And you're going to sit there for 1 hour, not half an hour, not an hour and a half, 1 hour. And you're going to sit on the floor, not on the chair, because I want you to learn how to sit on the floor. And you're not going to wander around anywhere, okay, because I want you to stay with the breath, okay? And of course, when your mind hears that, you know, it says, oh, I'm really busy, I've got to go, I've got to go, all this important thing I've got to think about. Anything to get away from you. Now that is one of the main reasons why people have a restless mind. Because your mind is trying to escape from you. And if it can't escape through thinking, it will escape through sleepiness. All of that, first of all, sleepiness is because you are really tired. But then once the tiredness is over, the boredom is just trying to escape from yourself. Because you haven't got a good relationship with your mind. You and your mind have just been fighting each other for far too long. So that's where it's good to be kind. When you're kind, what you're saying there is, okay thoughts, if you want to think, yeah, you can think. Off you go. Have a nice time. You don't control your mind. You're kind to it. And if anyone has problems with restlessness or with tiredness in the next 7 days, try this very powerful method. Ask your mind, what do you want to do, mind? Not what I want you to do, but mind, what do you want to do? And if your mind says, oh, I just want to think about, you know, business, fine, please go ahead, mind. If you say, I want to think of romantic fantasies, yes, go ahead, mind, whatever you want to do. Then you will find something amazing happens. It's like reverse psychology. If you are kind to your mind will go thinking about something for a few minutes, and then it will come back to you and say, "Why, thank you so much. Now, what do you want to do? Is it all right, mind, if we can just maybe watch the breath for a few minutes?" And you might say, "Yeah, okay. You are nice to me, I will be nice to you." It's just a relationship problem, that's what it is. Sometimes, you know, I ask people to do this, you know, you don't know what to do. Ask your mind, what do you want to do? And sometimes you're like, "I want to go for a walk." So you take your mind for a walk in the grounds. And then when you come back, "What do you want to do now?" "I'd like a cup of juice." So give yourself a cup of juice. And then you ask your mind, "What do you want to do now?" I said, "Oh, actually I want to meditate now." And if you are working with your mind, you find it's never restless. You're working with it rather than against it. And you find you have far more time on your cushion or on the walking path if you work with your mind. And you have that experience of that second woman who goes to the coffee shop with their best friend. You're sitting down on your meditation cushion and the mind says, "Yeah, let's meditate together." And you meditate for 5 hours. Jeez, 5 hours? I can only do half an hour. How many times have you been with a good friend and time just flies past and you don't notice the time passing? You thought, "Wow, that time already?" That's actually what happens with that friendliness to your own mind. So don't own the mind. Your mind is not a slave. It's not a maid you can boss around. Because you've been bossing it around for too long, that is why it keeps running away from you. With restlessness, fantasies, sleepiness, these are all ways of escaping. Escaping from what or from whom? Escaping from you. That's what it is. So please admit it. And when you're kind, your mind doesn't want to escape from you at all. It hangs out with you and it loves your company, which means it stays. Hours you spend together. No restlessness, no sleepiness, having a wonderful time together. That is the meaning of that simile. So I found that out. My old story, 5th year as a monk over in Thailand, 6th year. I found the perfect monastery. I've never found a more perfect monastery than this. Number one, it was up in the north of Thailand. It had good temperature for a change. Now, really nice and cool. Now, when Dania said yesterday, "Is it too cool in this hall in the evening time? Should I turn up the heater?" And I said, "Look, I was born in England. I like cold. It's never cold enough for me. I like cold. It's really nice cold." So I said, "You don't need to do that. I'm very, very happy being cold." So this was up in the mountains in the north of Thailand. At last, it was a cool place I could meditate in. And number two, for an Englishman, it was smack bang in the middle of a tea plantation. Now that was like heaven for me. I had as much tea as I could ever want to drink as an Englishman, all for free, really good stuff as well, because they got the best for me, in the middle of this big tea plantation. Had caves and everything, so to me, and I didn't know why, it was abandoned. And there was no monks staying there. And when I asked the villagers, "This is perfect, why aren't there any monks staying here?" And I remember the answer they gave me, said it's because too quiet. That was really quite interesting, because a lot of monks, they like to do things. And for me, no, I wanted it quiet. And it was abandoned because it was too quiet. And I loved that place. So I was there, heaven for me. I must mention the traffic problem. There was a traffic problem there. There was a road, just so you could see it from the monastery. One car a week. It would come up to bring up the post and any other sort of stuff and then take down some of the produce to get some bit of money for the villagers. And you have to be at the right time, looking in the right direction to be able to see the traffic problem. And then what an amazing sort of paradise that was. One car a week, no aircraft or anything. So that was paradise for me, and so I thought, wow, this is it, I'm going to have a really lovely time. And it was a lovely time for the first week or two. And then I started thinking. And I was only a young monk at the time, so, you know, I didn't really know how to deal with this. You know what I did when I started thinking? I started to try and stop the thoughts. Come and stop it. Watch the breath. Come and watch your breath. And that just made the thoughts worse. And worse, and worse. And they kept going faster and stronger and more weird. And soon I was starting to think, I don't mind telling this story, I started to think of old girlfriends. I wonder if she's still available. Now shut up, Ajahn Bob, you're a monk. I wonder where she is now. Oh, what's your breath? And all these really weird thoughts. Now, I like being a monk, but, you know, like, you want to meditate, but still these thoughts come in. And, you know, they're uninvited. And get out of here. And they come in even stronger. Do you know what I mean? You know, you're trying to get rid of those thoughts which come into your mind, all sorts of stupid ones, but, you know, you can't get rid of them. And I was fighting and fighting and fighting until I just got exhausted. And you're just so frustrated. Now, if ever you come across that frustration during this retreat, remember, this is what you're supposed to do. I just couldn't stand it any longer. I didn't know what to do. I just could not get these stupid thoughts out of my head. So I went to, there's no other monk there to talk to. And I was too embarrassed to talk to the lay people about what I was thinking. So I went into the shrine, bowed to the Buddha statue, and just asked for some sort of inspiration. And the inspiration came. And it was, do a deal. Make an agreement. And the agreement was this, that I would meditate on my breath, you know, for most of the day. But I would give myself a time, like a naughty monk time, 3 to 4 p.m. every afternoon. I could think whatever I wanted. I was not going to try and stop it or criticize it. Sexual fantasies, romance, anything. I would let happen from 3 to 4. So I thought, okay, mind, if you want to do that, 3 to 4 is your naughty time, if you want to call it that. Whatever you want to think about, you can think about it. And I won't stop you, I will let it happen. I promise to the Buddha, I won't stop it from 3 to 4. But the rest of the time, you behave. Now, you know, that sounded so reasonable and logical to me at the time. And I tried that. You know, it was just still such a fight. You know, trying to sort of keep these thoughts out. And so when it got to 3 o'clock, I was really tired. So I just leant against the wall, you know, and put my feet out because they were just aching. And I said, right now, I'm going to keep my bargain. Mind, for the next hour you can think anything you want. And I won't try and stop you at all. The weirdest sexual fantasies, old girlfriends, whatever you want to think about, off you go. And for the next hour, no joke, no exaggeration, the next hour I watched every breath without missing one. I couldn't believe it. Now I give you permission to think fantasies or whatever, and now all you do is watch your breath. But that taught me a great lesson. The fighting, that was what was feeding those fantasies and thoughts. Trying to get rid of them was giving them more power. And the sinner said, okay, let them go, you can do whatever you like. I love you, mind. You can do whatever you like. And then the mind actually stayed with me for one whole hour, no problem at all. Of course, that's not what I expected, but that's how you learn how this mind works. If you are kind and friendly to your mind, instead of trying to control it and being like some US Marine boot camp master to your mind, trying to train it, come on, sit up straight. Come on, stop moving. Come on, just... cross your legs properly. Put your legs back. Have you ever been to retreats like that? I used to go to retreats like that. I went to this retreat once in the Zen monastery where the guy came around the back with a stick. That was scary. That was really early Sunday morning, about 5 o'clock in the morning. And I was only a student. You know, young people are not genetically wired to get up that time in the morning. And this guy coming behind with a stick, and anybody who was nodding, whack. The teacher told you it doesn't really hurt, it just wakes you up.
Yeah,
sure. I didn't believe that at all. But I never got whacked. Because, you know, I've always had really good karma in my life. I've always been a very lucky person. Because, you know, what happened was the guy sitting next to me got whacked. And that was enough for me. I'm perfectly straight. I was not going to nod at all. That really sounded like it hurt. That sort of stuff, that's not wisdom at all. That's just total control. And out of fear. So instead of doing that, I don't control my mind. I'm kind to my mind. You know, we love each other very much. You know, we hang out together for hours, having wonderful times. That is how you overcome thinking. Compassion and kindness softens the mind and gets you a good relationship so you can hang out together. You don't need to think, because most of your thinking, just about all of it, is just escaping. And you always ask, what am I escaping from? You're escaping from you. Because, you know, you haven't understood who you are, you don't really like yourself, you're always afraid of who you think you are. You've always been told, ever since you were a kid, you're not good enough. You're not beautiful enough, you're not clever enough, you're not tough enough if you're a kid, you're not rich enough, you're not something. And when you tick all these boxes, you go to Cambridge and you have girlfriends, you still, there's a few more boxes, you're not enough yet. And it's endless trying to tick the boxes to be good enough. Now you're a meditator, okay? You know, you've got your business, it's successful, you've got a nice family, you know, you're happy, and now meditation, not good enough. Please, come on. You're good enough. I give you permission to say to yourself you're a good enough meditator. And once you know you're good enough, then meditation happens. You're at peace with yourself. When you're at peace with yourself, you have peace. When you have peace, you don't need to think. You don't need to think. Isn't that nice? A beautiful silence. So the next thing which happens, I want to say about thinking, once you get to know the silence, it becomes so attractive. You get hooked. Just like, you know, people tell me with heroin or with anything else which is, you know, very, very addictive and attractive. Silence is addictive like that. It is so nice. Your mind remembers it, recalls it. And the next time there's any bit of silence, your mind leaps to it and just holds on to it and doesn't let it go. You become very, very protective of your inner silence and you get to love it. Now sometimes people say, isn't that attachment? Yes, of course it is attachment. It's good to be attached to some things. As I keep telling people, if you are on the back of a motorbike, please be attached. Do not let go. Ah! So sometimes it's good to be attached. And this is one of the good things to be attached to silence. Because what you're really doing, you're getting attached to this vehicle of silence, which is going to take you into incredible, beautiful, happy states of meditation. Going to give you immense wisdom, great good health, and all these amazing gifts of, you know, meditative life. All comes when you get attached to the silence of the mind. So during, you know, today and the next days, when silence comes, don't be afraid of it. Don't try and destroy it. Guard it as like a precious jewel until you realize it really is something fantastic. All the wisdom, all the great insights, all the great happinesses, that's where they come from the silence of the mind. And it's always there for you. And after a while, if you're kind to the mind will share with you its silence. And you'll hang out together for a long time, with no effort at all. It's like a thought comes, they're not interested. You're hanging out with the silence. Just like your husband may be watching a soccer match. And you say, you know, dinner's ready. Later. You're enjoying what's happening, and it's more important. And that means the silence stays with you. And you get this incredible, wonderful stage of meditation silence. And you find, yes, I can actually meditate. I can be silent. Now I know how to do it. To be friends with your mind. Not a control freak. That is the key. So, again, if anything's happening today, just ask yourself, mind, what do you want to do? If mind says, yeah, I want to go to bed, have a rest. Okay, off you go, take a rest. If the mind says, I'd like a shower. But you had one 10 minutes ago. What the heck? Have a shower. It's not against the rules. So that means you're actually working with your mind rather than against it. And after a while, when you're friends with your mind, your mind's a friend with you, you can hang out and you're silent. You don't need to escape anymore. So there we go. That's all about thinking and how to stop it. So have a wonderful time. Now we have our interview times, if you've got all the whole list. Now, must say, with the interviews, you...